I'm Veronica Dudo. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, out from hiding, Venezuela's opposition leader appears in public for the first time in nearly a year. Why she says the tide may be turning. A measles outbreak hits the U.S., where it's happening, and what's to blame. Plus, by the numbers, EWTN commissions a new poll on what American Catholics think of the Pope, the President, and much more. We break down the results. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight. The White House responds to questions about a tense situation with Venezuela. President Donald Trump revealed yesterday that the U.S. seized a Venezuelan oil tanker. This follows several strikes on suspected drug boats that left dozens dead.
Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt addresses mounting questions about Venezuela.
The president promised on the campaign trail that he would demolish the foreign terrorist organizations and drug cartels around the world, especially right here in our own hemisphere. And you have seen that he is delivering on that promise.
Video shows the U.S. Coast Guard and Navy using helicopters to board and seize the oil tanker called the Skipper.
We've just seized a tanker on the coast of Venezuela, large tanker, very large. Largest one ever seized, actually. And other things are happening.
Attorney General Pam Bondi explains. For multiple years, the oil tanker has been sanctioned by the United States due to its involvement in an illicit oil shipping network supporting foreign terrorist organizations.
And it was a successful operation directed by the president to ensure that we're pushing back on a regime that is systematically covering and flooding our country with deadly drugs and killing our next generation of Americans.
But Venezuela's government says the seizure constitutes a blatant theft and an act of international piracy. This comes as tensions mount with Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. President Trump has said his days are numbered.
Our message to the people of the United States remains the same. Peace. Peace above all else. No to crazy war. No to bloodshed for oil.
The United States accuses Maduro of narco-terrorism. American military forces have been deployed to the region, conducting deadly strikes on drug smuggling boats.
With every drug boat that is taken out by this administration, we are saving thousands of lives by deterring those drugs and stopping those drugs from flowing into our country.
For the first time in nearly a year, Venezuela opposition leader Maria Corina Machado has emerged from hiding a day after winning the Nobel Peace Prize. Machado held a news conference today in Oslo, Norway. She says she got support from the U.S. to get her out of Venezuela. The Wall Street Journal reports she left the country on a fishing boat wearing a disguise. She refused to elaborate more, saying it could put people's lives at risk. During her press conference today, she expressed a note of hope.
And I assure you that I am very hopeful Venezuela will be free and we will turn a country into a beacon of hope, an opportunity of democracy.
We'd like to welcome back to the program Andres Enriquez, a reporter with ASI Prensa, a service of EWTN. Thank you so much for joining us. First, Maria Corina Machado was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize and has fled the country for the first time in more than a year. What does she represent to Venezuelans?
Well, the figure of Maria Corina Machado is really important for us Venezuelans right now because she represents a glimmer of light and hope that the country could achieve freedom as soon as possible. We have to remember that last year, millions of Venezuelans voted for her to be the presidential candidate. And although Chavismo avoided that, I think that still in the hearts of every Venezuelan, Maria Corina Machado has a very important place.
Now the United States has ramped up its presence in the region. What is the reaction of Venezuela to the seizure of the oil tanker, which the Trump administration says is part of an illegal shipping network?
Yes, yeah, so according to multiple reports, the oil tanker seized by the United States yesterday has a long record of illegal operations. We have to remember that the Biden administration first sanctioned this vessel back in 2022, when it was still sailing under another name. And yesterday, the U.S. authorities said that the tanker was boarded because of its role in an illicit oil trafficking network that supports foreign terrorist organizations. And when the news broke, the Venezuelan government called the operation a blatant theft and an act of international piracy. But the reality is that, in fact, this vessel has directly helped to finance groups like Iran's Revolutionary Guard and Hezbollah.
Now, speaking of the Maduro regime, you're also following the story out of Venezuela regarding Cardinal Baltazar Porras, the Archbishop Emeritus of Caracas, who was prevented from leaving the country. Can you tell us more about this and why he's being targeted?
Yes, so while all this is happening off the Venezuelan's coast, and while Maduro is trying to present himself to the world as peaceful and harmless, the repression and persecution inside the country keeps getting much worse every day, and the Catholic Church is continually being a target of it. Cardinal Baltazar Porras just yesterday tried to took a flight out of Venezuela, but once he reached the airport, the immigration police, which is controlled by the regime, confiscated and canceled his passport. And that wasn't all. They also blocked him from traveling using his Vatican diplomatic passport, and they subjected him to a very, very humiliating treatment, including searches to all of his luggage with drug-sniffing dogs, and he was even followed to the bathroom of the airport by military personnel. So Cardinal Porras, along with all the Venezuelan bishops, have been very, very brave in calling out the authoritarian and criminal nature of Chavismo, and this is the treatment they are getting in return. I personally think that they will continue to speak out despite all this, and I also think that us Venezuelans should be very proud of all of our bishops.
Andres Enriquez, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
A U.S. district judge in Maryland ruled today that Immigration and Customs Enforcement must free Kilmar Abrego Garcia while the legal challenge against his deportation moves forward. The judge ordered the release of the Salvadorian national from custody in Pennsylvania. The 30-year-old entered the country illegally as a teenager and has lived in Maryland for several years. In 2019, an immigration judge ruled that he faced danger from a gang that targeted his family. His case garnered national attention after he was mistakenly deported to El Salvador back in March. It's back to square one for the health care issue in Congress after the Senate voted down a pair of dueling Obamacare proposals. Democrats wanted a three-year extension of Obamacare tax credits, while Republicans were backing a plan to create individual health savings accounts and prevent waste, fraud, and abuse. So where do they go from here? Let's check in with Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales for the latest. Eric.
Well, good evening, Veronica. I wish I had better news for the more than 20 million Americans on Obamacare that face higher premiums come January. Now, prior to today's vote, I did speak one-on-one with Majority Leader John Thune. He told me that he knew both plans were not going to pass and were going to fail, but adds Obamacare simply can't continue as it is because it's a flawed program that's sending taxpayer money directly into the pockets of insurance companies. Leader Thune says one sticking point for Democrats is the Hyde Amendment, which prevents taxpayer dollars from being used for abortions. The leader says that that needs to stay in and is non-negotiable.
I would say the big roadblock to getting any kind of a deal, a bipartisan deal done right now, is the Hyde Amendment. The Democrats insist on allowing Obamacare policy to cover abortions, and that's a red line for Republicans.
Both parties agree on the need to address health care costs, but Leader Thune says the current system is filled with waste, fraud, and abuse, including those who can afford to pay for their own insurance.
You are moving away from a system out there where people get coverage through their employer in a small group plan, large group plan, get pushed into this individual market where the taxpayers subsidize it. And without reforms, you're going to have low-income taxpayers subsidizing people who are making $500,000 or $600,000 a year.
New Jersey Democratic Senator Cory Booker tells me now that both bills failed, he and Democratic caucus will gather and may be willing to back off on their three-year Obamacare extension demand.
I would take a 1 year right now. I'm not want to negotiate this publicly. I don't want to see millions and millions of Americans suffer. Hundreds of thousands of people in my state who are going to suffer if they do nothing.
Some Republicans say Senate leaders need to come up with a compromise fast.
So there's a bunch of us who are willing and eager to try to find a way forward on this. And I think we've got to, the bottom line, we have got to help the American people with their health care costs.
Democrats say President Trump is the key to any health care deal, but doubts he really understands the problem.
If you got a president who is like out of it when it comes to the challenges that families are facing, will anything bring him to the table? If we offer a gold leaf bill that he can sign with a gold pen, will that work? I don't know what would work with him.
And right now, things aren't much better over in the House. At least 10 Republicans on Wednesday signed a bipartisan petition authorized by Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick and Jared Golden that would extend the tax credits for at least 2 years while imposing new eligibility requirements. Meanwhile, two other lawmakers also filed a discharge petition on their own proposal that would extend subsidies for a year and add new guardrails. Both efforts are a direct challenge to House Republican leadership. Bottom line, right now it appears that several small groups, at least in the House, are doing what they can on their own to help solve this health care crisis with no direction from party leaders or President Trump. Well, I'll continue to stay on top of this issue. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Two measles outbreaks are growing in two parts of the country. Health officials warn it could get worse. In South Carolina, more than 250 people, including students from elementary, middle, and high schools, are now in quarantine. For some, it's the second time they've been quarantined since the outbreak began back in October. State epidemiologist Dr. Linda Bell says transmission is expected to continue for several weeks. Meanwhile, out west, on the Arizona-Utah border, another outbreak has ballooned since August. Arizona has seen 172 cases, while Utah has logged 82. Nationwide, the measles case count is nearing 2,000 for a disease the U.S. once declared eliminated with childhood vaccinations. Some experts believe the U.S. is at risk of losing that status if measles spreads continuously for a full year. From the Pope to politics, that's what a wide-ranging new poll from EWTN News and Real Clear Opinion Research surveyed. It reveals that U.S. Catholic voters highly favor Pope Leo XIV and have a variety of opinions about President Donald Trump's campaign promises. Correspondent Mark Irons has more.
From opinions on the first American pope,
justice, peace, and that's what we want from the leader of our church.
To U.S. immigration policy.
We desperately need immigration reform. We desperately need to control our borders.
A newly released and wide-ranging EWTN News and Real Clear Opinion Research poll shows the perspectives of U.S. Catholic voters. We asked Catholics to weigh in on a range of topics, from their thoughts on public figures, politics, and the practice of their faith. The poll found the majority, 70%, have a favorable opinion of Pope Leo XIV. Just under 44% called him very favorable, while almost 27% find him somewhat favorable. U.S. Catholic voters were also asked about President Trump and his campaign promises. More than half, close to 54%, were favorable to the detention and deportation of unauthorized immigrants on a broad scale. The poll shows the percentage breakdown of those who strongly favor or somewhat favor it, and those who strongly oppose, somewhat oppose, or take a neutral position. We asked Catholic voter Jim Payne his thoughts on the detention and deportation of unauthorized immigrants.
I agree with that, but not this way.
Payne is concerned with the Trump administration's specific handling of deportations, something echoed by U.S. Catholic bishops.
There's a way to enforce these rules without violating people's dignity.
But while he has an unfavorable opinion of President Trump, the majority of those polled, 52%, have a favorable opinion of the president. When asked which of Trump's campaign promises was most important to keep, 40.5% of respondents said reducing inflation, followed next by 15.1% who prioritized the mass deportation of unauthorized immigrants. On other topics, the poll found when they were initially asked, 54% of Catholic voters favored access to in vitro fertilization.
I would say that is sadly somewhat unsurprising.
But church teaching opposes IVF, When respondents were subsequently notified about that teaching, support for IVF dropped 9 points to 45%. Catholic Martha Hammond believes Catholics should educate themselves on the church's position, which is based on respect for human life.
I feel like people definitely need to do their own research about it, because if you look into it, it's very clearly the side effects of IVF are very clearly against Catholic social teaching.
And when our poll asked about belief in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, the numbers indicate Catholics who do not regularly practice their faith believe in the real presence at a lower percentage, while those that do practice believe at a higher percentage.
As people go to practice their faith more, go to confession, belief in the Eucharist increases. Shocking find there?
No.
Patrick Ruby, a Catholic seminarian studying to be a priest in the Archdiocese of Washington, said encountering the love of Christ in the Eucharist would naturally increase belief.
If you go to it, and you know the sacrament is something living, so it only makes sense that the more you participate in it, the more you have this encounter with Jesus Christ, the more that he seems real to you.
Mark Irons, EWTN News Nightly.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. Hurricane Help, how one organization is making sure impacted children have a happy Christmas. And after almost 400 years in Rome, the special tradition, the Irish College celebrates to ring in Christmas. The Labor Department reported Thursday that U.S. jobless claims for the week ending December 6 climbed by 44,000, reaching a total of 236,000. Despite this increase, the overall number remains within the historically healthy range seen over the past few years. However, there is some concern over the true health of the labor market. Yesterday, the Federal Reserve trimmed its benchmark lending rate by a quarter point, indicating a possible worry that the job market is weaker than its headline numbers suggest. It's been almost 2 months since Hurricane Melissa, a Category 5 storm, slammed into Jamaica. Today, many communities are still struggling to meet even their basic needs. Homes, schools, and critical services were destroyed, some completely leveled by the storm. Now, with Christmas approaching, World Vision, a Christian humanitarian organization, is partnering with WaterStep to deliver toys, relief supplies, safe water, and disinfectant to families who lost so much. Joining us now is Reed Slattery, World Vision's National Director of U.S. Programs. Reed, thanks so much for being here. First, can you give us a sense of what you're seeing on the ground nearly 2 months after Hurricane Melissa? What does Jamaica look like right now?
Well, that's a great question. We are almost 2 months after the storm, and the situation is still really dire. The town that we're in right now, Chester Castle, took the brunt of the storm, and the communications are still down, and it's going to be potentially months before power comes back to this community. So there's a lot of challenges that still exist, and that's why we're still here trying to meet these needs.
How are families coping with Christmas approaching?
Well, you know, it's challenging, right? Because some families have lost their homes. They don't have power or water. And that's what today's all about. I don't know if you can see behind me, but we got kiddos here. We're here at the Chester Castle Health Clinic. And there's a school right off to my right. And we have little kids coming through today. And today's all about bringing a smile to their face. It's about remembering the Christmas spirit and bringing that joy back.
Now, one of your stops is a clinic right next to a school that was completely destroyed. How meaningful is it for those students to receive support at that site?
Oh, it means a whole lot. And so one of the things that we've done today, too, even outside of the toys and the shoes, which are important, we've also tried to pay attention to some of the social and emotional challenges that are happening. So there's a lot of trauma that these children went through, right? That storm was very devastating for a child. Hard to process that. So today, before this took place, we did some activities with them, and one of them was called the Blessing Tree. And so the kids thought about different Christmas blessings and Christmas traditions, and they were able to decorate that and write that down and put it on the tree. And it just symbolized a little bit of hope coming back to the community, a little bit of that normalcy that we want them to walk away with. We want this to be a happy time for the kiddos, and so that's what we're trying to do today.
And can you just tell us a little bit more about the reaction from the children when they receive some of these gifts, especially after, for some, losing everything?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the kids have been so excited. I had one child earlier and we bought a brand new pair of shoes. The same thing with the toys. When they open up that Squishmallow, they give it a big hug. I mean, the smile just melts your heart. So we're really happy to be here. We're really excited that even though there's a lot of ongoing challenges, today is about the kids. Today is about bringing this Christmas spirit back to this community.
For viewers watching who want to support the relief effort, what's the most helpful thing they can do?
Thank you for asking that question. You know, there is still a lot of help needed here. It's going to be a long-term response. So if folks are feeling it, you know, if you're feeling anything on your heart, I would just encourage them to go to worldvision.org. There's a lot of ways to find out more information about what we're doing. If you're able to donate, you can make a donation there, and we really appreciate all the support.
Reed Slattery, World Vision's National Director of U.S. Programs, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, an Irish Christmas. See how the Irish celebrate Christmas in Rome. Irish music often reflects the nation's history, community spirit, and deep-seated Catholic faith. One of the best places to experience it, the Pontifical Irish College in Rome. EWTN News foreign correspondent Colm Flim visited the school and shares his report.
What child is this who lays to rest on Mary's lap this evening, whom angels greet with anthem sweet, while shepherds watch are keeping?
The Irish College has seen almost 400 Christmases in Rome, and Father Paul Finnerty is the rector.
Unbelievable to think that we'll be here 400 years. Next year, we're actually 100 years in this particular location, so it's a significant year for us. And then in 2028, we'll celebrate 400 years. So how Christmas was celebrated 400 years ago and how it might be celebrated today is a little different. Yeah. However, many of the Christmas carols that we're used to have their origins way back. So a lot of what would have been sung here originally has still been sung, albeit it may have been in, more in Latin and obviously in the different languages of the college now.
Today, not only do they train men for the priesthood here, but they also have started a new program where lay students can come to the college for a semester. Owen McCormack is the coordinator.
We're actually responding to a need or a phenomenon in Ireland that we've seen in recent years where there's a lot of young adults, young people coming together searching for deeper meaning and purpose to life. They're creating young adult faith groups. And here we're offering that opportunity for them to come to Rome, study the faith in university, learn some theology and philosophy and literature and art, and of course be surrounded by the classroom of Rome.
It sounds amazing.
Recently at the Vatican, Pope Leo spoke about the connection between music and faith, something Father Paul says is deeply meaningful at Christmas.
He spoke about the significance of music and it being a bridge to God. He actually went on to refer to the stairwell, which had a particular resonance for us with our students used to singing on the stairwell. He said that the stairwell is an imaginary stairwell leading us from earth to heaven through the music.
At the Pontifical Irish College in Rome, Colm Flynn for EWTN News Nightly.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, YouTube, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night and God bless.